Yeah, it gives me a fair bit of confidence because I had a bit of an interrupted sort of run into round one. I had a really good pre-season and then probably 3 or 4 weeks out, I missed both the practice matches due to the birth of River. So it sort of interrupted it a little bit, didn't get much footy in. And then obviously being able to get through round one very well, it was very pleasing. So feels like I've had a better run over the last 8 weeks being off than I sort of did into that 2 or 3 week period into round one. So yeah, I'm very excited to get back into it.
Yes, that is Jake Stringer. He's ready. The Bombers are ready. Full contact training has started. The AFL season is now only 15 days away from resumption, with the Bombers to take on the Swans at the SCG to restart the season. So things are certainly happening and it's all very, very exciting. I'm Adam White. Welcome to Working Through It. We're up to episode 8. It's a bit different today. I'll get to that shortly. Sean Murphy will join us and he'll tell us about how all the guys are shaping up ahead of the season restart. And then a special treat, one of the stars of the Bombers, Andrew McGrath, will be our special guest also. Now, Xavier is not here. Not just, he will be coming, but he's not here at the moment because he's currently in a board meeting. So he's going to give us all the gossip straight out of the board meeting when he arrives, hopefully in around about half an hour from now. But we do have both James Hurd and Job Watson to start things off. In about 15 minutes, we'll catch up with Sean Murphy. So if you've got any questions for Sean, give us a call. Or probably the best way to do is actually to text us. You can call us and we'll try and squeeze you in on 1300 652927. But the text message is the best option, 0416 90 50 52. You might have obviously a question about Joe Danaher, but it might be a question about Dyson Heppel. I know Cale Hooker looks like he's ready to go for round two. So plenty of players to ask about. So 0416 90 50 52 and we'll try and feed them in to Sean. And then a little bit later on, we'll do what we did last week and we'll do the 10 questions where we'll have plenty of Coles vouchers to give away as well. It went really well last week, so we thought we'd do it again. But officially, welcome in James Hurd. Hurdy, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Whitey. Good week, where it looks like footy's back on track and we'll get to see some football played very shortly, if only on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe Watson joins us as well. Joe, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you, Whitey. It is exciting to see. You know, we've got the fixture out now, so we've got an understanding about what the first few rounds will look like, what the travel looks like, and I guess it's going to be a little bit different for players, and we can talk a little bit about that, but certainly very excited to see all the players back being able to train together, and had a chat with Zach Merritt today, and he sort of conveyed how enjoyable it was to be able to do, you know, full ground training drills with each other and to be actually able to do proper match simulation as opposed to being in the groups of eight or so that they were over the previous week. So, Hurdy, how do you feel as if the first sort of round is going to look like for the team as we prepare? And, you know, someone who's coached a side, what would you be worried about? What would you be sort of planning, you know, to get the side ready in this short space?
Yeah, I think you want to try and go with your most experienced team or most experienced, fittest team. I think the cohesiveness of your side that's been away from the park for the last 8 weeks in training would be the biggest issue, how they're going to play together. And you don't really get a lot of time to pull that together. I think from a fitness and conditioning point of view, there's great unknowns in the team, who's done the work, who hasn't done the work. But I would imagine, you know, the teams that have that knack of being able to playing together for a long time and knowing each other very well will have an advantage over younger teams who really don't have that cohesion. So I think, you know, Essendon's reasonably well positioned. They have a lot of players that have played together over a number of years, but still with, you know, a number of new recruits who played in round one, also trying to fit in. So it'll be interesting when we do talk to Sean Murphy about what the focus is at Essendon, whether it is about fitness, cohesiveness, but also...
Well, we've just lost Hurdy there momentarily. I think we had some problems with his lines previously. You back there, Hurdy? No, we thought he's been a phone man the last couple of weeks, Joe, but we thought we'd been able to fix the situation. I think it's because he's got too many kids and they're all on the Wi-Fi at home, I think.
Taking up all the NBN broadband. And I think one of the things, Whitey, that you know, is going to be really interesting is that when this break that players have had, the cardiovascular training has probably been the easiest part of the actual training phase. But being able to do proper weights and being able to lift is probably been the most challenging, just because, you know, the what you actually need and require to perform those sort of techniques and isn't as easy as just running around. And so just wondering whether or not, you know, when you're not able to do the proper amount of weights and physically get your body ready, whether there's going to be an early season correlation with soft tissue injuries, with players who are used to doing weights that actually manage the load on their tendons and joints and things like that. And it's going to be like many things that we're faced with in this, unprecedented sort of preparation for players into a season. I think the injury rate is going to be something that's going to be really interesting. You saw today, the Swans announced that, Buddy had sort of nicked a hamstring as well. And I mean, we're obviously playing him and the Swans in the first game, but I just feel like it would have been the most challenging part of the training and conditioning phase for players would have been the weights and that power and being able to replicate that, not being able to go to gyms. And it's going to be interesting to see how that is, how players perform with that and the correlation between early injuries.
It's really interesting you mentioned that, because I think, you know, you talk about a long season, season's 22 rounds plus finals. That's why Sean Murphy's going to be so interesting, because you're almost going to have to sacrifice potentially the first two or three rounds to make sure your list is going to get through. Because if you go too hard too early, and try and throw it on the park, the guys that aren't conditioned, by round, you know, four or five, you might have half a list. It's that big a deal. And that's why I think players that have been around for a long time, been conditioned and used to the strains of AFL football, compared to young players, are going to be the guys are going to keep your team together for the year. Young players are really going to be the guys that just haven't done four or five pre-seasons are going to be a risk, I think, you know, after two or three weeks off the back of a short a short pre-season.
Well, we saw even just recently in the Bundesliga coming back, the German soccer league, there's been a really high number of soft tissue injuries with the players coming back off their break. So it'll be interesting to see whether that happens in the AFL. Job, I'm interested to ask you, obviously, unfortunately, you had that long part out of the game where you were still able to train, but there wasn't the contact work. There wasn't, when you came back and played, was your body different, and did it take longer to adjust to getting back into the normal training as an AFL footballer, as opposed to being out, having a kick with your mates at St Bernard's on a Tuesday morning or whatever you were doing?
Well, I wasn't doing that, but I think it really was, Whitey. It was the thing that I found the most difficult was the speed and change of direction, because that was just not something that we were emulating, or it was really difficult to do. And then also the contact stuff was really hard to get that and to replicate that. And I just found when I came back, it was that sharp change of direction that I think it was really hard to get back to, and also the contact work that you just don't do. And these guys, everyone's been in isolation over this period of time. It's going to be a challenge for guys to be able to step back straight into it. And I think that is going to be one of the things that, along with a lot of others, is how do players respond physically to the change of preparation.
How do you do change of direction drills on a boat in Croatia, Joe? How do you? What do you put cones? Or you dodge the mast? Or what do you do there?
I was spending a lot of my time changing direction, trying to keep people out of trouble. So that's sort of what I was doing. The dance floor is often, as I was working my way to the bar, Herdy, you got to get around a lot of people, get through quick as possible route.
And then the barista work, the changing direction, the barista work, going from the milk to the coffee and the machine and that sort of stuff as well.
The other thing that's very interesting, Joe, how would you go traveling on the day of the game, like Essendon are going to have to do, and on the same plane as another team, potentially Essendon will be going up, you know, 7 or 8 hours before the game and have to, I imagine, hang out at a hotel or hang out in the hotel foyer or at a restaurant or something. It's not ideal preparation, is it?
No, it's not. It's going to be, I mean, I actually didn't mind, I hated sort of staying around and hanging around in places before games. I just felt like it was a really difficult period of time to get ready and you felt like you were sort of wasting time. So the travel part of it, you know, I think would have suited me, but it would be, it's going to be very difficult and different for a lot of players who like the routine. Like, I remember playing with BJ. BJ was adamant that he loved going, you know, to the Perth 2 days in advance. He had to be there 2 days in advance.
And, that's why, because he wanted to play golf at Cooyunga or something like that.
Probably.
So what are you saying that BJ was a stickler for doing things his own way? I always found him very flexible, Brendan, with you know, what he wanted to do.
He's going to the supermarket to get the pretzels on the day before games in Perth.
I think that the other thing, you know, players, like, how will it be, you know, when they're consistently playing in front of empty stadiums? You know, like, what will that do to the, you know, motivation, being able to get players excited or have a team? You know, we talk about momentum so much in games. How much does a crowd impact momentum? And if, you know, a team gets a run on, and I remember playing in, you know, you're playing Richmond or Collingwood, and you could hear and you could feel how much the crowd was getting into games as they got on a run, or and that you could see players lifting and the excitement and the way in which players were responding to the crowd. When there's none of that, it's all going to have to be self-generated, and it's all going to have to, you know, come from players and their ability to motivate and to generate, and that's going to be really a strange thing for a lot of players who've been in the system for a long time, where they've just, you know, they've had such a external force that's been able to help them so much. And I mean, curious for home teams especially.
Well, Job, it's a good point, because we saw that in the opening round where teams just couldn't cope with no crowds. You know, we saw the Bulldogs just start really poorly. You know, Carlton had that same issue in the first quarter against Richmond. It was obviously different. Some teams just couldn't deal with it. It was quite interesting. Herdy, I've got a question for you. Now, Reece Shaw has put on the table that North Melbourne don't like Essendon. And they don't even like saying the name Essendon down at Arden Street. What's your experiences of the rivalry between the Bombers and the Kangaroos?
It was the most intense during my career. I still got Mick Martin's finger marks across my neck from being dragged around the goal square several times. MCG, Glenn Archer's handprint, you know, in my chest, or Wayne Carey's words stinging in my ears of, you know, you'll never get a kick. So I mean, they were a great team through the mid-90s, and we really had a fantastic rivalry and couldn't beat them. From about 95 through to, I think it was 98, we just got, you know, terrorised by them. And it wasn't till the pre-season of 99 that we really focused on North Melbourne and what they were doing right, and wanted to be more aggressive, more skillful, harder at the ball. And I think it was about round middle of 99. Carey kicked 14 and Lloydie kicked 11 or 12, and we just beat them. And from that moment onwards, for 3 or 4 years, we had the wood over them. But the only way to really beat them at that time was to match them head on in the physicality stakes, because that's what they were so good at. And obviously the 1998 final with the famous Marshmallow game, where Sheeves just decided to, you know, it wasn't as though we were beating them. We were getting beaten up by them as it was. And he started to call them pink and yellow and white marshmallows to incite them even more. But the great mastery was created more of a contest between the two teams. And there was a lot of respect from Essendon towards North Melbourne, but definitely a rivalry that, you know, we wanted to beat them whenever we could.
So a rivalry is real, Job. Like, we see, you know, Essendon, Carlton, Essendon, Collingwood. We talked about Essendon, North Melbourne. It was Essendon and Hawthorn over a couple of generations. Is that just made up by fans and media, or is it something that he's actually spoken about internally?
Oh, no, it's definitely not made up. I think that it's there. It's been there, you know, ever since the games have been started 150 years ago when teams were playing and suburbs were playing against each other, and they're still there today. I think the players certainly feel it in the locker room. You talk about it, during the week or before games, about it, the team that you're playing, and you certainly recognise what it means to supporters and to the club when playing rival teams. And one of the fortunate things about playing at Essendon, it seems like there's been that ability to generate strong rivalries with clubs, or not just in Melbourne, but also around the country. We have a great rivalry against West Coast. Obviously what transpired in early 90s with a couple of those finals and Sheeds, but then there's a strong rivalry, I think, with the Sydney Swans, playing in some really close games with them, and it's always competitive. And I think that that's one of the great things about the football club, is that it's not only those historical rivalries that have been there for 150 years, but there's been these new rivalries that have formed through great contests. And you look at Geelong Hawthorn, like that modern day rivalry is being generated from two great teams who just competed and played in wonderful games against each other. And that's what a rivalry can, it's when you're matching, the two best sides are matching it out against each other and just wanting to win, and the product is close games that are fiercely competitive, and that's where rivalries are born from.
Yeah, really interesting. Now, when Xavier does join us, hopefully it won't be too long until he does. I'm sure you guys will have plenty to chat about again later on. But I thought what we might do now is go straight to Sean Murphy, who'll give us all the latest news with the guys back training fully with contact work. And I think a lot of Essendon fans would have seen the Bombers out on the track at Tullamarine, and lots of them. I think there's over 40 on the track at the moment, which is really good news. And that certainly wasn't the case at times during the summer. And Sean is on the line now. Sean, thanks very much for joining us.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me.
Now, we've got plenty of questions for you. We've got questions on the text message. We've got talkback callers, Herdy and Job. I'm going to fire one at you and then let the guys go for it. How much better shape do you think this team is in now going into round two as opposed to going into round one when you had so many of those injury complications to start the season?
Yeah, no doubt. The 7 weeks that we had off has sort of benefited probably half a dozen boys that has allowed us to get them back on the track. Heppel, Ambrose, Hooker, even Stewart is able to get a bit of a conditioning block into him. We got him ready to play games, but this sort of block here has actually helped those guys to really condition themselves and prepare for now is what sort of round one for these guys. And I think I heard you mention it before, we actually had 40 on the track in our main training group yesterday. We've got three in the hotel, the Irish lab. So in terms of our list, we're looking a little bit healthier. And that brought the energy to our session yesterday for sure.
And Sean, you've really got 2.5 weeks to prepare for the first game. And having been involved in football, everyone thinks theirs is the highest priority from fitness, from welfare, from game plan, from skills. How have you managed to pull a program together to get the boys ready in 2.5 weeks? And what would you say is priority number one?
That's a really good point. One of the strengths, I think, from my time now arriving at Essendon is the relationship between the conditioning, the medical and the coaching structure. We collaborate really strongly and we've got a bit of a pathway to work towards. And we've sort of had a bit of a planned attack with this sort of couple of weeks that we've got. And the last week where we had the eight working in groups of eight and no contact, personally, I actually liked it because it gave us, from a conditioning aspect, an ability to see where they're at and build them up gradually, and work on that sort of acceleration, deceleration work, and have a real sort of method to where we're trying to get to. And then this week when you start to then add that next layer in, which is your contact, and we naturally get deceleration work out of that because you're playing more footy type drills. The boys have done the work over the break. When we got back, we had a chat with them, and individually we sort of screened them, and they were open and honest about how they've done their preparation. Some had high limitations in terms of strength equipment or access to ovals or whatever it might be. So that was probably our first port of call, was to get that information from them and then start to individualise their programs into this next little phase. And pleasing, they've come back really well, and we've been able to, so far, I feel, get some good loads into them. And this Saturday will be a good opportunity to sort of see where we can step it up to more of a footy type sort of open drills.
Murph, I'm just curious, has there been much of a change for guys physically who weren't able to, have access to, the weights and things like that? I just is curious to know, with the strength component of what people were able to do while they're away, and whether or not that you feel like that is an area of something that you're concerned about moving forward, especially with the way in which the game is and the correlation between perhaps strength work and soft tissue.
Yeah, spot on. We had such a range. Like, we had some guys that had full access to proper gyms and full-on weights, so they were actually able to... Some of these boys have actually rocked up in almost PB, squat, bench press. We had our testing the other day where we did just an upper body testing session, and we had, I think it was about 6 PBs, so... physically, they've rocked up really well. But then we've got the other end of the spectrum where guys had, at max, maybe a 20 or 30 kilo dumbbell. So we just had to try and do what we could to make sure that they got the stimulus they needed. One of our instructions over this break was probably the most important part, was run at speed. And the stuff in the gym is really important, but if you're not running at speed from a physical standpoint, from a, integrating back into your program, that's probably the biggest one for us. So the boys executed that really well, and that's allowed us to sort of step back onto the track. In terms of the gym stuff, Dez, our head strength guy, has done an awesome job this week, and we talk about the balance between it. We haven't gone with the ego and try and get them back. If they've only been squatting 40 or 50 kilos, we don't expect them to be back squatting 150 kilos. We sort of have a bit of a method to try and build them up over this couple of weeks. And that's really important, so that we actually don't miss sessions on the track. So the footy side of it's our most important part, and the accessories around that, their weights, just got to individualise, build back up again to get them back to what they were lifting sort of prior to our little break.
And Sean, the change in game time from 16 minutes down to, I think it's 20 minutes down to 16 minutes per quarters. Are you able to sort of look out and say that's going to change the game, there's going to be more speed on the game, how that's going to affect you in the last quarters, or are you just going to take it and see how it comes? And when you have, I suppose, round one was those same rules, wasn't it? 20 down to 16, I think. And yeah. How do you think that'll change your preparation, but also maybe the type of players you're playing, or it won't?
Yeah, I think it will. I'm still intrigued to see how it pans out over the year. We played 97 minutes of game time in our round one. Now, that's about 30 minutes less than what we typically play in a typical game of the previous years. So 30 minutes, chatting to the boys, they recovered really well. Some of them said 2 days later they were ready to train. So now you accumulate, over 3 or 4 rounds, you're going to be a bit different. But it was really pleasing the way they bounced out of that. But in terms of the numbers, it was genuinely 20% less with the type of loads that we saw from a Axel D-cell, from our run numbers and our high intensity numbers. So I feel like it's going to help some players, and it's probably going to help some of our guys that are sort of had limited preparation. Obviously, the 7 weeks have been gold for some of the guys, but it may actually assist some of our guys coming back to play the game. And we had a couple of players that just for the time of the game, they only played about 65 minutes because of their rotation, and they got caught on the bench, which was about 65% game time. So the comment from the players that our training sessions over the pre-season, and even probably to some of the ones we've done when we got back looking at our numbers, have actually been a bit more challenging than the game from a physiology point of view. So I think that will have a difference, and no breaks over the season is going to take its toll as well, but I feel that'll help a lot of players to bounce out, and I think only 6 to 7 day breaks it'll be interesting to see how we bounce out of that.
And Sean, in terms of the guys that weren't there in round one, can you give us an update on the expectations for, say, Heppel and Hooker and even Joey Danaher, what you guys are anticipating for their returns to the AFL side?
Yeah, certainly. So all those boys, bar Joey, partake in a full training session yesterday, our main skills. So they're all different levels. But, I mean, Stuart, just straight into it now, he's ready to go. Hooksy was, he's actually had a really good week. Obviously, he was able to do his prep back in WA, and he's ticked all the boxes that we probably wanted. And I've been really surprised and happy with where he's at. And again, he probably benefited him having last.
Oh.
And then this week to sort of build up into that full contact and full ground drill. So he's just into full skills now. Hep's just in that level now where he's performed in what we probably call performance mode, where he's done a heap of work with Nick Kane, our physio, in clinic because he could. So he's done a heap of dynamic work in there. We probably wouldn't have done that if we didn't have this block of 7 weeks. So we're seeing the benefit of that now, him coming back into the program, and he's now just going to be, you know, integrating into skills and building up his confidence, and we've just got to get to know where his body's at, and you know, he should be thereabouts, but we're not going to put any pressure on that. It's certainly, you know, working forwards and making sure that we're listening to his body as we're going through this sort of phase. And Paddy Ambrose is pretty similar. He's now back into skills, and we're just integrating into that contact from that PCL, from that Prakki game against Melbourne. And then Joey's he's going really well. He had a really good block over the period, and we've just got to keep listening to his body and how he's responding. And we were able to get a few sessions in one-on-one with him. Again, you know, Nick Kane's was doing a heap of work with him, and then able to get a couple of sessions with him up in Gisborne one-on-one. And you know, he's sort of up and down as prospect as we go, but he's back running again now, and we'll hopefully look to see him back into some sort of skills in the next sort of month.
Breaking news, Xavier Campbell is only 5 minutes away. The board meeting is just breaking up, so he'll be on the Working Through It podcast very shortly. That is great news with Joe Danaher that of where that's at now. Now, Sean, before we let you go, a couple of questions. We asked for them from our listeners, from our Essendon fans and members, and they've certainly come through on 0416 90 50 52. So a question here which has come from Tom, who is a 20-year Essendon member who lives in Flemington. He wants to know, did anyone come back from the break in surprisingly good condition? Who caught your eye?
Very good question. I mean, I don't like to single too many out because probably the whole group were relatively surprising at how they rocked up from the constraints we had. We do our you know, body composition measures, and everyone sort of rocked back in the similar condition as that they left. Probably a few guys, that I might as well put a few out there, that I was really pleasantly surprised. Hurls was obviously with his shoulder and everything else, he's able to put a few kilos back onto that upper body frame, and he's looking really strong and covering the ground really well. He's one that I've been really impressed at how he's rocked back up. Stuart, as was mentioned before, he's looking really good. Nick, he's actually lost a little bit of weight in terms of, you know, just being more of an athletic body type now, and he's ready to get back into it. And as I said before, Hooksy's in pretty good shape as well. So they're probably some of the guys that, you know, hadn't really seen much of them sort of train, and apart from Hurls, I've been really pleasant to see how they've actually come back, and they're certainly covering the ground, and that's just due to the way they looked after themselves over the break.
All right, a couple more. Just one from Les, which I think is an interesting question about osteitis pubis. We used to hear about it all the time, probably 10 or 15 years ago. Now, we don't sort of hear it so much now. Is that what Joe Danaher has, or is it something a bit different? And just a bit about osteitis pubis, does it still happen in AFL football these days?
Yeah, it's one of those ones that probably better to talk to one of the physios with a bit more of a knowledge of the analogy of it all. But essentially, it is still around. If it's the general term of it, we get a lot of ductor-type management issues, which seems to be the one that we sort of handle the most from that change of direction and the high XL, DCL work. So when, certainly in young kids, they're the things that we see a lot of, that change in load, where you get that tendon on the pubic bone that you get the issues with. But you still get, you know, obviously for a couple of our boys that we've had, they've had that true osteitis pubis, which is where the two pubic bones meet. And you get some issues in there and some friction or whatever it might be, irritation. And that's, you know, whether it's due from a load management, from a growth spurt point of view, or whether it is from the muscle tendons that are pulling onto that area that they're just not firing in the right sequence. And that's what we'll typically work with our guys is, you know, making sure that areas like the glutes and your posterior chain are really strong so that you're not sort of overloading that adductor sort of area that which attaches to your pubic bone.
Okay, and just quickly before we might get one more from Herdy or Joe, another one that's coming from Luke who says go Dons, which is always really important. He's just on, just to sort of share with our listeners, how difficult has it been for the players to maintain that high level of fitness required during the break when you aren't there with a stick telling them how to go about it and not having that structure in their training?
The honesty from the players has been really good. As I said before, we had that sort of screening when we got back, and like myself and like probably everyone in society, we had these sort of ups and downs and ebbs and flows, and there was probably, for nearly every single player on our list, they probably had a space of maybe a week within that period, whether it was early on because footy had been taken away from or in the middle there, but they just felt like they just were lacking a little bit of motivation. It was interesting, once the news came back that we're getting closer to a return date, the motivation really stepped up. So the block leading into when we returned, probably the last 2 weeks before we got back, I felt like the conversations that you had with the players, they were really motivated, and that allowed us to then step back into the program and hit it with a high level. But, yeah, certainly there was ups and downs from a motivation point of view, and as did myself from a fitness point of view, or just, you know, general just trying to keep busy.
All right. Well, they're good questions. Well, don't forget, a little bit later on, questions for Herdy, also Job and Xavier. One, how you do that is texting us through on 0416 90 50 52. We've got $150 Coles vouchers to give away, so we'll do that a little bit later on in the program. But Herdy, you've got the last question for Sean before we welcome back in Xavier.
Yeah, Sean, just one on behalf of the supporters. We obviously, they've all missed footy. They're hanging out for any sort of competitive game that's possible. Is there any space in the program for the old-style intra-club that we can look through the wire mesh fence and sort of just see who's going well and before we get into round two? Or is it too close and we can't fit that sort of thing into the program the way it's all looking?
It's a bit challenging. The beauty of it is we've got quite a few on the track, so we can do an 18v18, and no doubt we will be doing a little bit of that, but it's still pretty important, and talking with the coaches and going through it, it's that game plan side of it versus just going out there and playing footy is to getting the balance right, and that's probably a bit that we've missed, is that ability to train the patterns that we want or the drills that we want. So certainly the drills we'll be doing will be game style or game like, and we'll be just trying to replicate that. No doubt over probably the next week and a half, we'll add in probably maybe 10 to 20 minutes of some match sort of sim stuff where we actually just let the ball flow and let them get that sort of repeatability in their training. But, I don't think we'll be going to sort of that level where we do, you know, four quarters of 20 minutes or something like that. I think we've still got to get that level of training into them and, the game style re-intrigued back into them as well.
Well, Sean, thank you very much for joining us. You've given us some really good news, which is very encouraging, and hopefully that stays the case going into that first game against Sydney in a couple of weeks. Thanks for your time again.
No worries at all. Thank you.
Sean Murphy from the club with all the news on all the players from a fitness point of view. We're going to take a very short break. Don't go anywhere, though, because the star of the show, Xavier Campbell, is getting ready. He's in position. The board meeting has finished, so he'll join us shortly. And also Andrew McGrath. This is Working Through It on a Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, just to consistently perform for the team and play my role for the team, get that respect amongst the group and also throughout the competition. I think it's my fifth year now, so I really want to step up and earn the right of being one of the best midfielders in the comp. So, just keep striving and working for that.
Darcy Parrish, one of the stars for the Bombers, one of the younger stars that hopefully will take that next step in 2020 when we get back onto the field. Now, we've got someone who's a little bit more important than Xavier to get to first, and that is a talkback caller. She's called through and she wants to have a chat to James and Job. Her name is Chloe, and I think Chloe is 11 years old and she's a passionate bomber. Chloe, you want to talk to Job and to Hurdy?
Yes.
Go for it.
I just want to say first that, Job, you have always been my favourite player, and I was completely devastated when you retired and still am.
Oh, I'm sorry to have done that to you.
Jeez, Chloe. Job.
Inconsiderate, Job, I reckon.
Yeah, and you got a question for the guys?
Yeah, I was wondering, what do you guys, how far do you reckon Essendon will go this season? Like, how well do you reckon we'll do?
Good question, Chloe.
Well, Chloe, I reckon if we had Job, we'd do a lot better.
Yeah, so that's right. If Job hadn't let Chloe down, yeah.
Yeah, but Job, you answer that question.
Yeah, I think, Chloe, and I do apologise profusely for retiring on you, and I thank you for calling in. I actually think that the Bombers can finish certainly in the top eight. I think if you look at what players are coming back this year, you know, Devin Smith and Orazio Fantasia both had hugely interrupted years last year. They will play an enormous part in the team being able to score more. Hearing about what the way in which the new system that Blake Carosella is introducing and how that's been adapted by the players, and I think will only benefit as well. I think that we saw the improvement of Darcy Parrish towards the second half of the year last year, and to get him in the midfield more often with Andy McGrath. I do think that the Bombers are capable of finishing the top eight. And I think that, especially this year, Chloe, that if you finish in the top eight, it's going to be such a different style of season and campaign that if the team is playing well at the right time of the year with shortened games and a healthy list, then there is no reason to think that if you're in the top eight that you can't win the flag. And I think that the Bombers are good enough to be in the top eight. And certainly I think that if they're there, you wouldn't question anyone's ability to win the premiership from that position.
Terrific, Chloe. Thanks very much for your call. Because Job feels so bad, we're going to organise a $150 Coles voucher for your mum and dad to make sure that they get really good things for you from the supermarket. Lots of chocolate and stuff like that, ice cream. That has to happen if you're going to get the voucher. So thanks very much for your time, and we'll hold on to your details.
Whitey, we might also organise a jumper or something for Chloe that I can sign. I like to still know that there's some fans out there at least, and I'm more than happy to send something to Chloe.
Ah, very good, Chloe. Make sure you hang on the line so we can get your details. That's very special. You're going to get something there from Job. Okay, now it's time to bring in the boss. Before we go to Andrew McGrath, just to at least say hello to Xavier Campbell, and then I'm going to sort of duck away and let the guys do what they normally do. But Xavier, welcome to the program officially. And I know you're going to talk to the guys a little bit later on after Andrew. What happens at a board meeting? Without going through the details, how long do they go? And sort of just take us through inside the boardroom of the machinations of how it all works.
Yeah, good afternoon, Whitey. Good afternoon, Joe, Jim. Thanks. Sorry. Well, that meeting clearly when I went about a half hour to an hour over what I thought it was going to go. hence, I'm a little bit late to the podcast, so apologies. And I needed to be careful prioritising the podcast over a board meeting, I think. So
we could have done a live broadcast from the boardroom.
That's at one point I thought I was going to need to. But I'm glad I'm online because it's already rewarding having seen James's new glasses that he's wearing. Looks like he's stolen them off the warden from the Shawshank Redemption. Unbelievable.
Sorry. The man who set this up hasn't been here for the last 2 weeks. I think you should just pipe down a little bit. These glasses have travelled around the world with me. They cost me $12, and they still work very well. Thank you very much.
Between you and Harvey, Harvey will walk in. He'll go to the servo and get his $2 pair, and he'll be running with one arm. He'll be sort of draped off his side of his face. It's just a little bit weird, but that's all right. Now the board meeting, I mean, clearly they're a little bit unique at the moment, Whitey, because there's still a lot of scenario planning and modelling, and there's a big financial focus. around the business model and the structure. And there is still a lot of unknown elements that we need to, you know, essentially insert into our modelling to inform you know, debt levels and all those sorts of things. Clearly, having the season look like it's going to kick off very, very soon is important. You know, the modelling of a 17-game season versus a season without any games, obviously stark difference. And you've, as a board, you know, an executive, you have to, you know, plan for the worst, prepare around the rest of it. And that's something that we've had to do an enormous amount of. So it's sort of a big focus early was what does a worst case outcome look like and how can we ensure that we are positioned to be able to get through that. And clearly, you know, a big part of that was we didn't want to be an assisted club from the AFL to ensure we could control all the decisions that we were making moving forward. But a lot of that required, you know, a lot of discussions around funding and modelling structures moving forward. Clearly, where we get to now is that our member retention piece is very, very important to us. You know, football clubs are lifeblood of the football club, is their membership. There's a lot of work around our sponsors and engagement there, and retention of sponsors is obviously going to be far easier than attraction of new sponsors when there's a downturn in the economy. So we've got to work really hard there. And probably another, you know, a really unique topic that we spent a lot of time on today was the football department compliance. You know, there's the very rigid and strict compliance around what training looks like, what interaction between the football department and the rest of the business looks like, even what training looks like. And, you know, we don't want to push any boundaries. We want to make sure we work really closely within those parameters that have been established by the AFL. Every club is determined to do that for obvious reasons. It's a license to be able to play is something we don't want to take for granted by any stretch. And that's you know, and that's a big focus of the board to ensure that we've got the right structures and processes in place to ensure that we do that. And one element that was pretty consistent apart from general finance was the football report. You know, obviously football, there is an element of not being back to normal exactly as we would normally be, but there's still a focus on the key areas we want to improve, with training coming back, all those sorts of things. So Dan Richardson gave a general football update. So that's basically what it looked like. Whitey went for about 2.5-3 hours.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting. All right, talking about the football department and getting back and playing football, certainly Andrew McGrath falls into that category, one of Essendon's young stars, and he joins us now to talk to James Hird, Joe Watson and Xavier Campbell on working through it. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How are you going? Thanks so much for having me on.
Andrew, welcome. It's James Hird here, mate. Welcome to the program, and I'm sure there's many Essendon supporters out there hanging off every word here you're going to talk about. Firstly, how did you handle the isolation? Where were you? And were you able to get quality training in during that seven or eight week period?
Yeah, James. It was obviously a unique period, something that I don't think anyone could prepare for. So it was, we're all in the unknown a little bit. But I think the main feedback from a lot of the players, we actually got a lot done. There's rarely a season where you get, I guess, 7 weeks to work on exactly what you want to without the demands and rigors of games every week and training every other day. So you could really hone in on working on your body, working on a few areas of your game that you really want to fix, and also had a good life balance outside of football. Personally, I picked up another couple of uni subjects, which was great, and really got to, I guess, put that in front of everything else at the moment, which was great, and it distracted me a lot from what was going on worldwide. But having said that, it is great to be back.
And I know your brother's a very talented soccer player. Were you able to do a lot of training with him, or you had to train on your own?
Yeah, I did a little bit with him. It was pretty strict, the guidelines throughout the break. You could only really train with one other person. So I did a lot of my training with Jordan Ridley, who was drafted with me at the end of 2016. But then my little brother stayed with me a few nights at my place and took him through a week of training, which was great. We had both footy and soccer balls out on the Albert Park ovals, which was pretty fun.
And Andy, it's Job here. Thanks for joining us, mate. I just I'm curious to know that I spoke to one of the players today, and he was talking about, you know, it was great to be able to be back together on the track and do the work, but that there's no meetings, there's no sort of catch-ups in that sense. Everyone's still in their designated groups for weights and things like that. And I'm just wondering, you know, like, personally, you know, I would not be missing any of the meetings. But is it a bit odd that you just sort of
jump in there? That's your perfect scenario, Job. No meetings.
Well, I won't say who this player was, but he did say that it's much better, and I hope it never goes back to the other way. And I'm just wondering, from your sense, does it feel like you're back training normally, or does it still feel a little bit odd?
Yeah, Joe, it's very different. I wouldn't say it's better or worse, but it is different. We're kind of in at the club for 2 to 3 hours a day, which is vastly different to the 6, 7, 8 hours that you normally would spend there on a main day. Like you said, again, there's no real physical meeting. We get in, we do what we have to, we train hard, we do our weights, and we get out. You kind of only really spend a lot of time with your group of eight on most days. Yesterday, we actually had our first training with the whole squad, which was awesome. I think we're only allowed to do that twice a week at the moment. But it is a very different look, and I think a lot of players are enjoying having no meetings and not being at the club for a full day, but I don't know if that'll last long term, but a few, like you said, will be banking on it.
And Andy, just looking at the game plan, I mean, it seemed to have changed a little bit from last year, and with the influence of Blake Carrasero and obviously Ben Rutten taking a more senior position. Are you concerned at all that, you know, teams like Hawthorn and Collingwood and Richmond and these Geelong who have had two or three or a long period to get their game plan set, and it's a pretty standard game plan, but for us it's really the ability to have a cohesive nature on a new game plan and not be able to train that much. Are you concerned where we'll be for the first 4 or 5 rounds till that becomes embedded in the players?
I think with every new sort of system or adaptions in a game plan, it's going to take a little bit of time to master and become really proficient at it. I think over the off-season we made a lot of inroads in the few changes that we did make to our game plan that were going to help us win and stand up in finals football and big games. So I guess to answer the question, I'm not too concerned. I think from coming back, we haven't really lost any of the knowledge that we gained throughout the preseason. And I think our brand of footy will look very similar to what it did in the preseason games, if not better. We're learning and learning every day, and I guess picking up new things and becoming more familiar with how each other moves and plays every session. So I think we'll just continually improve in that area.
And Andy, in terms of you know, the preseason that you had and setting yourself up for the year, I mean, you were talked about by multiple people about being a real standout and you know, having another preseason under your belt and then being able to sort of go into that midfield role more consistently. I mean, do you feel like you've lost any momentum in terms of how well you were going, or do you think that, you know, it was a break, you still feel like you're in really good physical condition and you're just sort of raring to go now into the season?
I think it's more the latter point. I guess you all know with AFL, it's a lot about what's between your ears and what you think about yourself and how confident you are within your body and your abilities, a lot of the time, more so than your physical attributes. But personally, I think I'm in the best state I've been since I got to the club. I kind of say that every pre-season, but you get to the club as a fresh 18-year-old, and every season, every pre-season, you grow and build as a player. And I feel really comfortable in the position that I'll hopefully play for the year, and really comforted by the form that I had in the early pre-season games in round one, that I can withstand that throughout the year. So I'm really looking forward to getting out there. And although the break's slightly frustrating for everyone, it's just what it is. You can't change too much about it. And I'm raring to go come round two, and hopefully we can pick up where we left off.
Andy, I want to ask you a question about the mechanics and almost the hierarchy within that midfield halfback type team. I know when Joe was starting with us, he'd try and sneak into the centre square, and we'd say, "Hey, young fella, get back to the forward pocket." When Dyson was coming into the team and tried to sneak into the midfield, Joe tapped him on the shoulder and say, "You get back to half back." Now you're trying to sneak into the centre square. You know, is Dyson or Dylan or Devon or any of those guys trying to push you back out, or you're able to sneak in there for a look as much as you would like?
Yeah, it's a funny one. they do like the centre square, the guys you did mention, but I think I'm starting to sort of slide my way in there, which is nice. It's really fun to play alongside those guys. They're obviously class players and have been for a very long time. But at the end of the day, it's all competition at the club. We compete against each other for those spots and inevitably make each other better. So whatever I can do to make them better, that means trying to take one of their spots in the centre bounce, and that's just better for the team. So it's a really healthy, competitive environment at the club right now, and yeah, trying to do all I've done to earn one of those spots.
Who's the hardest to push out? Which one just won't get out of the centre square?
I think Sheely doesn't like moving from there.
the easiest way to do it, Andy, was to, if you picked up Herdy's man after the centre bounce, then he was quite happy for you to come into the centre square.
you learn quickly, Joe.
So, I don't know. Maybe that's what Dill. That's what you need to do. If you pick up Dill's man after the centre square, then he'll be wanting you in the centre bounce as well.
I'll try that one this time. We'll see how we go.
And Andy, have you got any knowledge about, you know, what sort of time you're going to get on a flight to go to Sydney, and do you have to travel to North Melbourne, and what you're going to do between, you know, getting there at potentially 9 or 10 a.m. and playing a game later in the afternoon? Is there any transparency, or has the AFL been able to shine any light on how that's going to work?
We haven't heard too much yet. I think we know just as much as the media are kind of speculating at the moment. We're pretty sure we're going to be flying with North Melbourne, which definitely means that we'll be there quite a bit earlier. What that looks like on the other end, we don't really know. I think this whole season's a unique one, and we're preparing for anything, really. So I don't think any team's really flown in on the same day and flown out that night, let alone have a 5-hour gap from landing to playing. So it'll definitely be unique and bizarre for us all, but I think every team's going to be in the same boat at some point in time. And hopefully we find those details out pretty soon, but it's not really something we're too stressed or concerned about.
Well, Andrew, thanks very much for your time. We really appreciate it. I'm sure you're really looking forward to getting back and playing and not training. Fingers crossed it all goes well when you bounce the ball against Sydney in a couple of weeks.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Can't wait for it.
Andrew McGrath joining
us. Good luck, Andy.
On working through it. Before we go to a bit of a break, both for Herdy and for Job, describe to us how you see Andrew McGrath as a footballer, because he's quite unique in the way he plays. He can play a variety of different roles, but how would you describe him? Where do you think his best role actually is?
Yeah, I think that for me, like his best role is going to be wherever the ball is going to be. And so I think that he's progressed to the stage now where you just want him around the ball as much as possible. Like when he first arrived at the club, he's an incredible one-on-one defender, you know, like an incredible one-on-one defender because of his athleticism and his competitiveness. But he's too dynamic not to be in and around the centre bounce, you know, like in and around the ball. And that's where I would be playing him. And you never wanted to expose him there too early because he had to build a body and he also had to build a tank, which I think that he has. But I would be utilising his sort of a freakish athletic attributes and his competitiveness around the ball as much as possible. And that's why I'd play him in the centre square. And as we talked about last week, you know, the midfield for Essendon, it's about balance and it's about complementary balance. And that's the key to, I think, how the midfield should look. It's about placing players who complement each other's games. And I would put Andy in there and I'd complement him with other people around him that make his strengths even stronger. And that's the key, I think, for the dynamic of the midfield.
Yeah, I definitely agree, Joe. But I remember when Adrian Dodoro recruited him, it was about his talent and his also physical ability, but his ability, his work rate and his ability to learn and just get better and better once he was in the system, I think, was something that really appealed to Adrian. So I think he'll play across a number of roles. I think midfield will definitely be his main role going forward. But you just see the class of the kid and the way he plays his footy, but also the stories you hear about his work rate, his work ethic, and also his ability to learn on the job. I think the sky's the limit for someone like Andy McGrath.
Yeah, he's certainly a very exciting player. Now, if you want some text messages to be read out, questions for the guys, the number to text in is 0416 90 50 52. We'll get to them shortly, and a reminder that the best texts will get Coles vouchers valued at $150. So we'll do that.
Hey, Whitey.
Yes.
Just quickly. Is Xavier still on? Is he actually in this show, or did he just jump off the board and go back out?
I've taken the opportunity to take over, and Xavier's just sort of, you know, just off to the side.
He's still there, is he? Okay, he's there.
Whitey, I'm still mesmerised just staring at the Herdy's spectacles. I can't take my eyes off them. Joe and I have got a side discussion happening on our SMS, just talking about them. It's quite incredible.
Well, we have got a problem.
Can we bring the X Factor back? I just want to make sure that the X Factor is...
We have got a little bit of a problem. Job has created a major problem for the Essendon Football Club and working through it, because we have been inundated with calls. And calls from a lot of the youngsters that are all saying that their Job is their favourite player and they all want a jumper. So the kids that should be at school who aren't yet for a couple of weeks, they're all ringing up. So we've only got one jumper. And Chloe was the first. She's the leader, so she gets the jumper. So we'll see what we can do a little bit later on. But we got to remind everyone, too, that talking about Andrew McGrath being a number one draft pick, and Herdy, you mentioned Adrian Dodoro, the final Dodcast episode is out now. It's episode 8, where Adrian answers Essendon members' questions about the past, present and future. Apparently, Adrian says it's a must-listen episode. It is the last of the series, and he's already working on series two, we hear. So,
I think the only question Adrian Doro needs to answer is that haircut he's had for the last 35 years, because it has not changed. That's the first question, and the only one that's really important.
Yes. We're going to talk to someone. We're going to go a bit more serious after this on working through it. It is a Wednesday afternoon. For all Essendon fans out there, we'll be back in a sec.
One thing that I would really implore the AFL to look at the moment is, you know, like, I hope that we don't cut lists and cut the opportunities. A lot of the Indigenous players that have made AFL careers have come off rookie lists, whether it's, you know, Aaron Davey, Dean Rioli, and a host of other boys that have, you know, come on as late draft selections. And I think that, you know, it'd be, you know, and none more so last year than Marlon Pickett. You know, what a great story that was, at 28 years of age, to be picked up in a mid-season draft, late in a draft. Now, had you have, you know, cut list sizes down last year, he possibly wouldn't have been the story of the year.
You can see there Adrian on his latest episode of Dodcast clearly getting ahead of himself, really taking on the AFL. It's real Neil Mitchell type of activity from Adrian Dodoro, which might be more of series two when he starts that very soon. But as I said, if you want to listen to all the stories of Adrian and the players that he's recruited over the time, just do what you're doing now and get onto the website, essendonfc.com.au. But guys, seriously here, we've got Alison who has phoned in. I know that you guys were pretty keen to have a chat to Alison. You know, this podcast is all about Xavier, the club working together, working through it, as the podcast is called, and Alison is certainly one of those Essendon members. Alison, thanks very much for being part of the program.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Now, you've got a bit of a story that you would like to share.
Just struggling with our memberships for this year. I'm currently not working due to COVID-19. We've got three memberships, and for the last 9.5 weeks, I've just been sitting at home. I'm in a high-risk category, so I haven't been out anywhere, just relying on my husband and family to do everything for me.
That sounds tough, Alison. And you're not the only one. We're definitely very aware of that. And, obviously, the club launched our Back a Bomber campaign a couple of weeks back, and Andrew Welsh was on the show and playing a really big part in helping provide some funding toward that, and Michael Hurley before him a few weeks earlier with one of our other loyal members. So we'd love to put you into the Back a Bomber campaign and cover your membership for 2020, because you've been a long-standing member, a very loyal member, and we can't have enough of them. So we really appreciate all the work that you do behind the scenes for us.
I really appreciate that. Means a lot, because, you know, we love supporting the football club, but at the moment it's just not a reality that we can extend ourselves to do that.
And Alison, it's James here, and thank you very much for all your support over the time. Just a question on the football team. What's your favourite game you've been to, or your favourite memory
of the Essendon Football Club over the time you've been supporting and a member?
It would have to be the 2009 Anzac Day game with David Zaharakis.
Very good memory. Were you there?
Yes.
You were there? Fantastic. Yes. Well, I'm sure Zach is listening because Zach loves his name mentioned, so that's...
And we watched it this Anzac Day since we couldn't go, obviously, this year. We sat at home and watched it all over again.
Alison, how did you become an Essendon supporter in the first place?
I met my husband in 2000. I moved from Queensland to Melbourne. And my first game I ever went to was in 2000 with him to a game on Mother's Day. And ever since then, 20 years later, I'm a fully fledged member and obsessed with football.
You chose a good year to come down and start watching games.
Yes, that's what everyone said. You just jumped on the bandwagon.
Oh, well, no, I mean, we certainly appreciate it, you know, all the supporters and understand that people are going through difficult times at the moment. So thank you very much for your continued support. And it is humbling as a player to know how much the football club means to people and how big a difference it makes to people's lives. And I think that we want supporters to know as well that how important that the players view them and how thankful that, you know, all the players are that they get so much support from people and how loyal the Essendon supporters are. And I certainly felt that in my career. So thank you for being such a wonderful supporter of the club as well.
Thank you.
Keep your head up, awesome. Alison. Thank you for your great support. I think we might even have a Coles voucher there, do we, Whitey, that we'd be able to shoot to Alison as well?
Throw one of those in too, you reckon?
Why not?
All right. Well, you're the boss, so whatever you say goes. So no dramas. We'll do that. No problems at all, Alison.
Thank you very much.
It's interesting, isn't it, guys? Through this period, you know, I think players had always been accused of maybe taking fans for granted at certain stages. But at every turn and every play you listen to from any club now, they do continually talk about how much the fans mean to them. And I just think it's great from an Essendon point of view. Well, firstly, the Michael Hurley, what Michael Hurley did. In guaranteeing some members their memberships. But every player we talk to about how important the fans are, and even for Job to talk about, I mean, you know, the fans are the lifeblood of the club, and I just think it's great recognition from the club. So well done to you, Xavier, and the club for doing it.
Yeah, well, thank you guys for getting on board. I mean, even just something like this, we've always spoken about how this, you know, COVID-19 wasn't going to discriminate. Everyone was going to be impacted in some way, shape or form, and some are impacted more than others. And that's, you know, we're a family, it's a footy club, and we want to try and get all our members through. We appreciate some, it's going to be really challenging and they might want a refund in their membership this year, and we've got absolutely no issues with that at all. For those that can maintain it, you know, we'd love for them to keep it for all the reasons that we've spoken about the past few episodes. But we are there to support people like Alison. There's going to be plenty others like that, and hopefully we can help them through this next 12 months.
All right, the questions, the texts for Xavier, James and Job aren't too far away, so 0416 90 50 52. I'm watching them just flood through at the moment. There's some really, really good questions, so we'll get to them shortly. But before we do that, I know Xavier wants to have a chat to both Hurdy and Job after missing the start of the program because of the board meeting. But we've also got, and we've got to do this now, the Coles mighty moment, and this certainly is a mighty moment. That game was actually on this day back in 2007, where, as Stephen Quartermain said, the Bombers came from 3 goals down. I remember it was Jack Revolt's debut. Matthew Richardson got really angry with the umpires late in that game, and it was a win to the Bombers. Hurdy, you were there when the Dreamtime game first started. What did you ever imagine it would be as big as what it became when Sheeds first came up with the idea?
Oh, similar to Anzac Day, Whitey, I don't think any of us thought it would get that big. I mean, it because of Anzac Day and how big Anzac Day had become, when Sheeds talked about the idea, and it seemed to be a very special day, and And obviously with the Indigenous heritage of the club, you know, Longy being a huge part of the club and really everything that he'd been through. And he spoke about that game before the first game. And I don't remember the first year, unfortunately. Don't remember exactly when it started, but he spoke about the first game. And then we all got a massive education on I suppose, the culture, the Indigenous culture. And, you know, it was the first time that I'd sort of been educated around, you know, when Indigenous culture, when Aboriginals allowed to vote, when the fact that, you know, recently in our history, this is how Australia treated the Indigenous people, even to the point around the Indigenous states and the fact there were so many different languages. And I learned that through the football club and through Dreamtime at the G, to the point that, you know, March to the G and what it is now and the, I suppose, the just the absolute celebration of Indigenous culture. And that's why Kevin Sheedy was not only a genius in coaching football, but he saw what was important for the community and worked hard to make a difference. And I think, you know, Dreamtime at the G certainly makes a difference to not only football fans, but more importantly to the Indigenous culture in Australia.
And Job, your reflections, you obviously played in plenty yourself as well. It seems to be one of those games that had just got bigger and bigger as the years progressed.
Yeah, well, I think it has really, you know, like it's sort of, it's become like an event, you know, for the entire society. It's not just a football game, much like Anzac Day is now. It's transitioned into a day in the calendar for the whole community. And, you know, and the game is sort of secondary almost. It's, you know, it's fortunate that the game is, we get to play in such a, you know, exciting game with huge crowds, but it's almost a secondary event to everything else that it means. And it's just another way in which sport, it shows that sport can be a great catalyst to do change and to make a difference. And I think that, you know, credit to Sheeds with his foresight to, and also, you know, what Michael Long did in the first place to give the awareness for it to be the impetus for the game to go ahead.
All right, let's get to your questions. There are, as I said, so many coming through from Essendon members and fans. Every time I refresh, another four or five come through. So we'll try and get to as many as we can. So you got to ask to answer these questions really quickly. It's like fast money or something in Sale of the Century all those years ago. The first question, I like this one, is after Heps, that's what it says, after Hep, who is the next likely captain of Essendon? Now, both of you have captained Essendon, Hurdy and Joe. Maybe you both can have a quick go at who you think it might be the next one.
Merritt or Andy McGrath for me, one of the two.
Yeah, I think it would be Zach I think it's Zach. I think Andy could be a captain one day, but I don't think he should be the next captain. So I think Zach Merritt will be.
Okay. Question here from Danny, all the way from Victor Harbour in South Australia. This is probably one for you, Xavier, because you've seen the players. Who's got the worst or weirdest or most impressive hairstyle change during the break? There's quite a list to choose from.
Oh, there's a lot of peroxide running around now. I mean, I've struggled with some of the haircuts for a few years now. It's too close to call. Guelph's happy to embrace some outrageous design up in his hairdo, but I couldn't sort of point a finger at anyone too much. I think for people like me who are struggling with our follicles upstairs, we have to admire a lot of what the guys are doing these days. But gee, there's some outrageous hairdos running around, isn't there?
Yeah, there certainly is. Honest opinions on our premiership window this year and over the next few years.
I think we need another year or two, if only to make sure that I think the game plan can get put through the club. I just think it's very, very hard to bring in a new game plan and have that go through players as quickly as possible, particularly in this environment where you're not going to get exposure to players to teach them. So I think it's a year or two away. I think the list is certainly good enough, and I think that the age demographic he's not too far away, but as Bruce McAvaney said last week, we need a little bit more consistency, and that hopefully will come with embracement of the new game plan.
All right, we'll leave that one there. We'll go to the next one. This one from Ben from Backus Marsh. It's similar. and it's sort of been answered, but I'll sort of throw this one maybe to you, Joe. My question is, what do you feel, this is from Ben, are the main reasons Essendon are not quite at the top level, like the teams like Richmond, Geelong, Collingwood and so forth? Some similar Hurdy saying?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's continuity, and I think it's the ability for people to play consistently at the same level. I think that you see those teams are in good age brackets where they've got strong spines, but also a lot of players sort of in that 23 to 28 range. And I think that they've played a lot of footy together. And as Hurdy's touched on, this side, we brought in, you know, three or four players from other teams who take time, even though they're mature players. And we're trying to bring in some other young guys as well to get them to play together. It takes time and there's inconsistencies. And when you have injuries that take players off the field, it means that there's even more inconsistencies of personnel, which makes it even tougher. And that's what I think is has been the problem and why we're not the same.
What I will say, Whitey, and I agree 100% with Job, is that you know guys like Hurley, Heppel, Hooker, Tommy Bell Chambers, and I'm probably going to leave out a few, but their time is now, and those guys, you know, they, and this is not a criticism, they would know that as well, but they need to realise that, you know, they don't have too many more years at their peak, and so you know, I think that those guys, that those senior players who have been around the club for a while, should embrace the fact that they've got, you know, some good coaches. And say, we've got some good talent around us. Let's and some guys that have taken a punt. I mean, Dylan Shield and Devin Smith have had options and they chose Essendon. So they believe in them. So I think that we are a chance. It's just that, you know, the senior players around there need to go, okay, you know, and Zaharakis as well. Let's make this our time, as you know, as most of us did at some stage.
Your list, Bill, further to what sort of Hurdy had said before as well. I mean, your list build is strategic. I sort of referenced this a bit, but you know, when we played West Coast last year in the elimination final, I think our average games played in that team was about 75, and West Coast's average games played was about 137 or 138 or something like that. So in effect, it's every player on the West Coast team had something like two or two and a half seasons more experience than our guys. Whereas this year, with the continuity we've been talking about, there's not as many interruptions as we've had in the past. You know, we get up to, you know, it will be sort of mid-90s in terms of average games. So you start to, when you look at the premiership teams of the past 10 or 15 years, I think the average games sort of sits in between around 110 to 140. 140 is actually starting to get quite experienced and almost pushing over the other end. But that's sort of an important benchmark as well, and something when you think about the list management strategy and working about, that is something that you do spend a bit of time on, looking at demographic, age, games played, as well as obviously the obvious piece around positional depth and things like that.
And the other thing too is having 40 players out on the track, you know, yesterday, that's huge. Don't underestimate how important that is going forward, particularly in a year where you would think there's going to be more injuries going forward than normal, just because of the preparation and the condensement of the games. You know, if you can keep that sort of those sort of numbers on the track for the next 5 or 6 weeks, and you've got a huge advantage over other clubs. You know, hearing that Buddy Franklin might have nipped his, you know, hamstring. I think Basher Hawley at Richmond's got a bad calf. Every club seems to have something, but those 40 players on the track is that's a very, very important number.
I think Xavier's just fallen off his chair. He's just realised that Buddy's hurt himself. He was being in a board meeting and might have missed that news. So,
I got someone texted me actually during the board meeting.
Now, I've got I really like this text. This is from Janice, who's an Essendon fan and member. Hi, guys. Firstly, thank you for these fabulous podcasts, particularly James and Job, for continuing to give back to the club. I've maintained my membership, but like many, have no work or support to be able to have Foxtel. Is there a chance that non-free-to-air matches can be screened through the Essendon website? That's probably one for you, Xavier. I can say I think this is a very good idea.
Xavier, this is actually a really interesting point, because the English Premier League, they're demanding, I think there's a couple of games on pay TV, but they're demanding that there are a lot more games on free-to-air than were on free-to-air before. Mm. And I think it's a great point, because, yeah, if you didn't have pay TV, you could go and watch the game live. But now you can't watch the game live. I think it's there is a fair bit of restriction on who can see the game. And I know Fox are going to have the alternate view. They're going to want as many people to sign up as possible. But it's actually a legitimate argument that I think the... You could call the ACCC in, couldn't you? Xavier, with your power, you could get on the government and get an anti... Or ACCC, whichever one it is.
Anti-siphoning. it's definitely front of mind, Whitey. I mean, obviously, we're very lucky. I'm sure we'll talk about the fixture in a minute, but our first four games post the restart are all Channel 7 games. I think we might even be the only club to have, you know, to have been given that opportunity. So that's something we won't be taking for granted. It's great for our fans to be able to see it. I know that the league has been working closely with the broadcasters. There was a deal struck with KO earlier in the year that was a really reduced package that was available to all club members. I can't remember the specifics of that deal, but it's something that I will look up because it's... We are determined to have as many fans see our games. Obviously, it's difficult when you've got existing broadcast rights agreements and things like that. But I'll tell you one thing that's positive is, and this has built momentum in the last week, clearly things change really quickly, but the opportunity, the potential for crowds in this season is starting to build momentum. And we've seen, obviously, the release of some of the social distancing measures over the last week, probably a little quicker than I had probably thought might happen, and which is great. Clearly, society is doing really well managing the COVID issue. But if we can keep that going, I mean, the potential to have our members come back, even if it is in an unusual form with social distancing and things like that, that would be fantastic. I mean, that's got to be our number one goal, obviously.
I know that you guys want to have a bit of a chat before the end, but I'm conscious to try and get to as many texts as I can because there are literally hundreds here. So I'm just trying to sift through as many as I can. There is one here for you, Xavier. Have you ever actually had a spray from a coach?
Present company included or not?
Oh, it just says from any Essendon coach. Well, James was an Essendon coach.
I've had some robust discussions. I wouldn't say I've had a spray necessarily. I think footy's a pretty emotional game, and where we've been, and you know, it's had some really challenging moments. But I wouldn't say I've had a spray from a coach. I think we've worked through. There's been a lot of other issues we've spoken about, different points to different staff that we've. It's been really challenging, but I wouldn't say I've had a spray just yet. I do remember a moment where if looks could kill, I think I would have got a spray from Woosher a couple of years ago where I don't go into many of the football meetings except for post-game. The chairman and the CEO normally come in and listen to the coach's address post-game. And I think it was a close loss. And I'd been watching, because it was close, I would have been watching the AFL app late in the game and sort of watching different elements of the game, trying to see them from a different angle. And I hadn't closed that app. So when I got into that meeting, I then opened my phone up right in the middle of Woosher sort of staring down the barrel and giving quite a stern sort of post-match discussion with the players. My app just kicked into gear and the commentary just started at quite a loud volume, and if looks could have killed, then I think I would have been in a bit of trouble.
All right. Now, four or five have come through for you, Job. Would you ever consider a coaching or mentoring role?
I think maybe one day. I always felt like I wanted to get away from football and do something else. But I still have a love for it. I think it would just be whether or not it was the thing that I wanted to do at the time, and whether I felt like there was some value that I could add, and whether it was something that I wanted to get back involved in. I think it was very important for me to progress my life away from football. And that was the reason, you know, that I wanted to get out of the system and to do other things. And I know I've really enjoyed doing that. And whether or not that leads me back to football, I think that one of my feelings was that it was always really important. If football was what I really wanted to do, then it was to, under the preface of coming back to it rather than never leaving it and just staying in it the whole time. And so that was really important to me, that if I ever do come back to football, it will be out of a real desire to want to be back in the system rather than a fear of leaving it.
Now, in fairness of openness and transparency, the questions have also been coming to you, James, on that same question.
No. do you need any more elaboration? Or?
Well, no, not really. I asked the question, you got an answer. So it's fast money.
Fast and furious. Yeah.
Exactly.
Job and Xavier waffle on. I can give you some answers.
bunching a few together. Look, there's been, and we really appreciate the support, the amount of support for this podcast, and obviously, you know, I can say it because for James and Job and for Xavier to be giving up their time to do such a thing, particularly James and Job, it has been fantastic, and it's so appreciated by so many text messages that are coming through.
That's because Job and I turn up. We actually give up our time, whereas the other bloke just
well, he's about to have his,
he's going to have the final say.
But there's also a few that have come through over the last few weeks, actually, and it goes back to the Foxtel discussion as to whether there can be Essendon radio broadcasts of games. Now, I don't think I can put my media hat on here. I don't think you can actually do that contractually. Because of the radio rights and all that sort of thing, of actually doing an Essendon call with, say, you know, Hurdy and Job doing special comments and that sort of thing. You might correct me if I'm wrong here, Xavier. I think that's the way at the moment, anyway.
You need special approval for something like that. I think we broadcast a game, special Essendon commentary, a few years back in Hindi. I think it was a game for our Indian round. But you do need to get special approval. It's something I think, Hurdy, I think you and I have spoken about this in the last few weeks.
Yeah, Job and I would love to do it. We'd love to bag all the players. They don't get a kick or...
do you reckon we could get the X Factor on as the special commentator?
No, I want his golden tonsils to be the commentator, to be the Bruce McAvoy of the caller.
Well, yeah. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw it out there that it has been suggested by quite a few of the Essendon fans. That's pretty much it. We'll judge who the best ones are. I think that's important, but we'll do that as we go along. But Xavier, I know you want to sort of finish things up, and Job's got a bit he wants to say as well. Away you go, guys.
Thanks,
Waddy.
The first question to Xavier.
Oh, here we go.
Should the players expect to be taking a 20% pay cut, Xavier?
Well, it's entirely linked with the broadcast agreement of the league, Job. So until that negotiation comes to a conclusion, I think it's difficult to... Well, I wouldn't want to speculate on what players should or shouldn't have to take. I mean, I think it's obvious that everyone in the industry is taking reductions across the board. It's a reshaped, resized industry, and we have to be prepared for change at all different levels. You happy with that, Joe?
Yeah, no, I'm just curious, as was reported by... a chairman of another club hasn't got a problem speculating, you know, like on what the figure might look like. I was interested to see what your thoughts would be and whether or not that player should start conditioning or be conditioned to expect a cut and what that would look like from someone who's already signed a long-term agreement. On a fixed contract, you know, like if someone's got a 5-year deal and the money is fixed, what does that look like from a salary cap? What does it look like from a contractual obligation? And these are, I suppose, questions that football departments across the league will be faced with.
Absolutely.
And we'll need some guidance from head office, I guess.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, I'm conscious I haven't made a headline since the first episode. So I know you're keen to sort of drive that clearly, but I just think there's going to be a reduced pool of funding and revenue going to be coming into our system over the next 2 to 3 years. I think that's obvious for everyone. And there's a whole lot of agreements that have been reshaped and reworked. I mean, it's sort of, I'd imagine it's probably, you know, the equivalent of 3 or 4 years of agreements being condensed into a really short, you know, maybe 3 years of agreements being condensed to a 3-month period. When you consider the CBA, the funding for the clubs in the short term, there'll be a medium-term funding distribution piece that has to be sort of structured again, the broadcast agreement and what that looks like moving forward. So there's a lot going to change. But I think generally, if you consider the complexity of the of the negotiations that have taken place so far of, you know, the contraction of the industry. You know, you look at the football department, soft cap is going to be reduced by at least $3 million next year. That's significant. I'd imagine in other areas of the business, the reductions will be somewhat equivalent. So, you know, it stands to reason that there will have to be a reduction in the CBA and the total player payments. What that looks like will be led by those other elements.
You got, you know, before we go, Xavier, I wouldn't mind talking about the membership situation, because I know that not just Essendon, but a number of other AFL clubs at the moment, it's a major, major focus. What's the latest with the club? And you've just come out of the board meeting. I'm sure there's plenty to report in that space.
Well, the membership, I mean, we only launched our membership campaign, obviously, last week. We spoke about on the show, or the last couple of weeks we've spoken about, we only launched it officially, formally last week. And the response has been extraordinary. I mean, I just am amazed at the support, the members. You know, obviously, their connection to the football club, there are reasons why members sign up, and there are all different reasons for why they sign up. It's not just about going to games and things like that. It's this connection to a football club. And the amount of messages, clearly the overwhelmingly positive response to pledging and maintaining membership this year has been really, you know, it makes you feel quite emotional, because it's just that clearly means so much to people. They know the challenges the clubs have got. We know that a lot of people are in hardship as well, and have different pressures, so we're very appreciative of that. One thing I would say on that, Whitey, is that we've only communicated so far with about 25% of the member base, which sort of staggered as we'd said we would, because we wanted to be able to manage it appropriately from a resourcing perspective. So for those members that haven't received that formal or official communication from the club, it is coming, don't worry. And there are a lot of calls and emails that we have to respond to. So we are working our backsides off in here to get to that. So they will come, but the response has been quite phenomenal. And on behalf of everyone at the club, I just thank the members. They're just an incredible group.
Well, that seems like a good final word. Is there anything else anyone wants to say before we say goodbye? Nope.
No.
Shaking their heads?
Can I say that? Just one piece of news, which is quite a big piece of news. Obviously, we only have two episodes left. We've got the premiere coming on our last episode as a major guest. But it will seem like strange timing to launch a new segment. But for next week and our final show, we'll have a new segment called "Who Wore It Better." And I wasn't sure what the segment should be titled. I consulted with a whole range of different past players from the late 90s, 2000s, to try and work out some sort of common denominators amongst my two co-hosts here. And what it was obvious, and James's glasses are probably sort of speak to that as well today, is that neither had a great level of dress sense. And there are some footage, stock footage and images that someone in the club's got access to that we'll be able to bring, and hopefully our fans can vote on that, because there's some outrageous outfits that we're going to see over the next couple of weeks that will bring a smile to a lot of people's faces. Nice. and a lot of confidence when they go out next time in public and dress up to an event, knowing that they dress better than a couple of hosts on this show.
All right, okay.
Well, I've got a couple of comments to make, Whitey. firstly, Joe, I'm not sure he knows what he started. Because I know you have a very deep mind that is very disturbing sometimes, and so Xavier, I'm not sure you started, but interesting, Joe. I didn't realise the podcast had finished. Xavier's now sacked me twice, once as a coach and once on the podcast. So been sacked twice by the same bloke. So thank you, Xavier, for that. Really appreciate it.
Well, based on the text messages that have come through, particularly over the last couple of weeks, Xavier. Yeah. I think you'll be a very brave man to stop this podcast. There's a lot of people that are expecting this to be going right the way through the season by the look of the text message traffic. But we'll talk about that at another time. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time, as always.
Instead of calling him the X Factor, he might be the executioner from now on. Yeah, that's right. With his track record.
That's exactly right. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Thanks, guys.
That is the end of another episode of Working Through It, Episode 8. So Xavier Campbell has just said there's two more to go, which will make it a nice round number at 10. We hope you enjoy the rest of your night, Bomber fans. As I said at the start of the show, it's only 2 weeks until you can watch them back in action again. It can't come quickly enough. Have a good night. We'll speak to you next week.